You're listening to the Play Therapy Podcast with Dr. Brenna Hicks, your source for centered and focused play therapy coaching.
Hi, I'm Dr. Brenna Hicks, the kid counselor. This is the Play Therapy Podcast, where you get a masterclass in child-centered play therapy and practical support and application for your work with children and their families. In today's episode, we are continuing with engaging parents, and today we are going to talk about when parents are resistant, which is everyone's most frustrated and discussed topic, it seems, lately. So there's all kinds of discussion, not only in the six-figure play therapy coaching, but also in the new collective, lots of conversations about what do I do when parents call and tell me that they're going to take their kid out of therapy, or what do I do when a mom or dad says, I'm only going to let them come two more times and we're only 10 in, or how do I get parents to be on board with this? You know, they bring them, but they don't do anything that I tell them to do, and they're never actually implementing anything that I share with them. And it's so frustrating. So we've all been there, right? And it's really interesting. And I've said this before, but this, I think, paints the picture of the unique circumstances in which we find ourselves as child-centered play therapists. We are not working with the parents as clients. So we're in this very unique situation where we actually have to have a relationship with the child who becomes our client, but then we also have to have a relationship with the parents who are responsible for the child being our client. And they have to drive and show up and pay and be committed and be invested and meet with us and share what's going on. So we're in this very unique relationship where our client is the child, and we can pour in to that relationship as we should. But if we don't pour into the relationship with parents, things usually fall apart. So when we're thinking about resistant parents, and obviously resistance can look different, but I have come up with what I consider to be the top six reasons why I typically witness resistance coming from parents, from the many, many therapist that I've trained, and obviously with my own work with families. So not a comprehensive list by any means, not exhaustive, but I do want to share with you some thoughts on why parents can be resistant, because the why always matters. And then obviously how we address some of those issues to the best of our abilities. So let's dive into resistant parents, why they are that way, what we can do about it, and hopefully to preserve the therapeutic relationship with the child. So I think first and foremost, oftentimes parents have a very difficult time with taking their kids to therapy because they perceive it as a failure on their part. So what I mean by that is there is often a lot of guilt, a lot of shame, a lot of embarrassment, and they wouldn't be there unless they were so desperate that they don't think there's any other options. So the guilt, the shame, the blame, the embarrassment, all of that is so heavy. It's very, very hard for them to be happy about something that they feel they're being forced to do because they don't have any other choice. It's gotten so bad that they don't see any way out except therapy. But by admitting they need therapy, there's an admission that they have failed as a parent. So if we recognize that the guilt and the shame and all those feelings are swirling for them, it is our job to reassure them and to support them and encourage them and validate them and normalize the situation for them. And it's about helping them feel that there is no judgment and they're doing right by their kids by reaching out to you. That's a really big reframe. You feel so guilty, you feel so ashamed, you feel so embarrassed that you had to reach out, and you feel that you failed, but by reaching out, you're actually doing right by your child. And that really can turn a lot around for a parent that really just feels that they have done a huge disservice to their child and screwed them up so badly that they now have to bring them to therapy. So perception of failure is a big one, and we have to be very sensitive to that. And even if it's not overt, sometimes they're not going to come out and say those words, but it is very clearly an undercurrent. So we need to be really sensitive to that. Second option is they are confused and don't really have any clarity about what they're signing up for. So what I mean by that is, and this isn't child-centered play therapy unique, this is children's therapy as a whole. I have so many parents that will say, oh, and I know absolutely nothing about this. Or, you know, we didn't go to therapy when I was a kid, so this is all new to me. Or, I mean, I don't even know how a kid needs therapy. I mean, I was not an 8-year-old that was going to therapy, so I just don't even get this whole thing. So often there's confusion and lack of clarity about why their kids need therapy, why their kids can't just figure life out like they did as a child. My kids have a better life than I ever did, and I was never in therapy. Why in the world does my kid need therapy? So there's a lot of questions, and it doesn't make sense to them. They're often confused, and they just don't really get it. And therapy seems like this brave new world of unknown, and they're just not really sure what to think about it, how they feel about it, what to do with the confusion and the feelings of unknown. So they tend to be a little bit hesitant. They tend to be a little bit skeptical. And it's just kind of an arm's length kind of approach where, like, I'm here and I'm listening to you, but this all just seems like a little bit of hullabaloo, right? Official word. So what I typically tend to do in that kind of situation and encourage other therapists to in that situation is you really have to help a parent understand developmental appropriateness. So you talk about how children aren't rational. You talk about how they live in their emotions. You talk about how they don't have abstract reasoning. You talk about they're not cognitive or intellectual. And therefore, they get stuck because their head and their heart are constantly in a battle. And you actually kind of give them big picture explanation of why child-centered play therapy is effective. But you don't do it to convince them that CCPT is appropriate. You do it to convince them that therapy is necessary when kids are wrestling with things that they can't make sense of developmentally. You know, age-appropriate honesty is something that sometimes parents need because they are looking at everything through an adult lens and they're operationalizing everything that's happening through a cognitive, rational, intellectual frame. And they have to understand that their children are not in that same space. So providing the explanation and communicating why sometimes kids need therapy. And again, you normalize. I mean, you're going to hear me say that. I won't say it all 6 times, but just know that the more you normalize, regardless of the root cause, the better the outcomes. Because parents don't know if this is normal. Parents don't know if taking their kid to therapy is something that other parents do. They don't even want to admit it out loud. So they're sitting here thinking, my kid is crazy and I'm the only one that deals with this. So when you reassure them and normalize and help them see that your kid is dealing with stuff that we deal with all the time, this is a pretty standard thing that you're describing here. You know, I'm not surprised at all with what you're sharing with me. That helps them feel that there's not such a confusing bent to the whole thing. All right. Third, sometimes they just are not bought in. And how do you define buy-in? That's a helpful question. So, of course, you want parents to be engaged. You want them to be invested. You want them to understand the weight of the commitment that they're making. So there's time commitment, there's energy commitment, there's monetary commitment, there's driving back and forth and a schedule commitment. Same time, same day each week. If you don't have a parent that is very much on board and very fully committed to the process, they sit on the edge and it's very easy for them to drop off. So that's why we have parent consultations. We talked about that in last week's episode, right? That's why you have an initial parent consultation. That's why every 5 weeks with the child, you have another 5-week consultation. Why? Because you want them to be bought in. You want them to stay committed. you want them to be personally invested in the outcome, but also in the process. So the more you communicate, the more you teach them, train them, educate them, equip them, the more buy-in you're likely to get. Now, not every parent's going to buy in no matter what you do. But the way that you communicate and the way that you handle and structure your 5-week consultations will at least give you the best chance of keeping them bought in. That's why every 5 weeks you sit down with them for an hour and you have that meeting, because it's a reselling, and I'm air quoting, but it's a reselling of the child-centered play therapy process. We're going to do another round of five. Here's what you can look forward to. Here's what you can expect. Here's what we've been doing. Here's what you need to be doing at home. Here's something I think you'll find really effective. You try to get as much ownership from them as possible. And that comes with extra, extra communication. All right, number four. Another reason they might be resistant: not understanding the process. So the process of child-centered play therapy is well-defined, right? Which ironically, that's one of this modality's greatest criticisms, is that there isn't a process and it's just willy-nilly, which is hogwash. I digress. So the process is that there are stages of child-centered play therapy. There are phases of child-centered play therapy. There is a timeline documented for child-centered play therapy. And we know at any given time, a child is in a stage, in a phase, and in a portion of the timeline. We also know that they are going to usually get worse before they get better. We know that resistance is sometimes going to hit hard, and sometimes it's going to be difficult. We know that sometimes parents don't see evidence of change until long after we've seen it in the playroom. We know that sometimes the child is only able to implement new skills in one environment, but not others, until they've fully mastered it. So we might see improvement in one environment, but nowhere else. There's all of these things that we can help them prepare for. So we tell them about the stages. We tell them about the phases. I don't know which one I said first, the stages and the phases. We tell them about the timeline. We tell them what to expect. We help them predict and expect potential obstacles and barriers, or potholes, or backsliding. And we give them stories, and we give them metaphors, and we share illustrations, and we do all of these things so that they understand the process. Because if a parent has unrealistic expectations, and or they don't understand what's coming, if they feel surprised or caught off guard, or something unexpected takes place, it's very easy for them to bail. But they will hear your voice in their head. Now, I just want to let you know that sometimes behaviors get worse before they get better. So if we've been in therapy for a little while and all of a sudden you feel like things were pretty decent and then there's just like a crash, I want you to remember that I told you that things will get worse before they get better, and I don't want you to panic, and I don't want you to think that therapy isn't working or that it's making things worse. This is a part of the process, and we will get through it, and it won't last long. And all of a sudden, then when that happens, they're not going, "Oh my gosh, this is terrible. This is not working. I don't even know why I'm paying for this. This is making everything worse. This was a terrible decision. I'm done." They're instead going to go, "Oh yeah, Brenna said that it was going to get worse before it gets better. So this is probably what she was talking about. And I mean, gosh, this is terrible, but you know, she said it shouldn't last long. And so I'm just going to be patient." And lo and behold, they waited out and it's fine. So you really do have to paint the picture of what the process is going to be and eliminate as many unknowns as possible. All right. Fifth, and I'm laughing because this is usually the biggie, that nothing is working fast enough. So our quick fix, instant gratification society that says everything should have immediacy and there's a silver bullet magic pill to fix absolutely every problem in the world. Well, that has conditioned people to think that if they've taken their kid to therapy for 3 or 4 sessions, that everything should be fine. Speaking of which, in the collective this week, or maybe last week, but recently in the collective, someone posted that a parent reached out and said, yeah, I need to get my child in for an emergency session. And when the therapist said, okay, well, the process is that I'll meet with you and we'll have a consultation. And then, you know, went through the expectations and the process. The mom was like, oh, no, I just thought I could like bring her in for like one time. So not only does that go back to confusion and lack of clarity, that also goes back to not understanding the process, but it goes back to the immediacy, right? So I just want to take my kid to you, you play with them for an hour and like things get better. They just need therapy. Well, one of the things that I encourage clinicians to say to parents a lot, and I say it with my own families, I wonder how long it took for us to get to this point. I wonder how long ago it was that you first started noticing these concerns. I wonder how long this child's been struggling with this. I wonder what time frame we're looking at when we're looking at the increase in struggles and issues here. It's never a short time frame. And I say that absolute on purpose. It's never short. It's always months at the minimum, sometimes years. And then I say, well, so if it's taken 6 months of struggle, this isn't going to fix itself in 6 days. And when we help them understand that it is a process, and it would be a process with any modality. Another criticism CCPT gets is that it's very long. And, you know, if we're looking at solution-focused, quick approaches, CCP doesn't fit the bill. Well, a child that's not going to think their way to feel better, you can't expect anything to get better quickly. They have to feel it. They have to live it. They have to do it. They have to process it. This isn't CBT where you just think about your behaviors and you think about your thoughts and you merge them together. That's not the way a child heals. Child's not capable of healing that way. They have to practice and live it and feel it and do it and be it and all of these things. So it takes time. It doesn't matter what model it is. Doesn't matter what theoretical orientation. It's going to take a long time with kids. So everyone wants a quick fix. And you have to paint the picture that this is a process. And therefore, there's a patience issue. And if you consistently, broken record, communicate to parents, you just have to be patient. This is a patience game. This is a waiting game. Trust me. Trust your child. Trust the process. It will get better. You have to give it time. And you might have to say that 1,700 times, but if you constantly remind them that there is no quick fix and it will get better, you're just buying yourself time. You're buying the child time. But parents have to understand that there is no immediate overnight revolutionary change. There is no such thing. So that's a very important message to communicate, because if they want something fast, if they want to bring their kid twice and have the issue go away, they could search the world over and they won't come up with an answer. All right. And then lastly, little bit of a different scenario, but if you are dealing with a divorced couple or a separated couple, often one parent is pursuing therapy and the other one is not, and or they're not particularly in favor of it or on board. So sometimes you find yourself with one parent that's actually very much bought in and very much supportive of the process, and then the other parent is either forced into it or coerced into it, or is being dragged along kicking and screaming because they think it's nonsense or their kid is fine with them. That's usually what it is. I don't have any problems like this that you're describing with this kid at my house. It's obviously a mom problem. It's obviously the way dad parents, because I do not have any of these problems. So there's a denial of, you know, there's any issues because they have the perfect household, right, in comparison to the other parent. So there's a disconnect, and often one parent is not really bought in. They don't like the idea. They don't think it's necessary. They don't want to pay for it. They don't think their child is struggling. There's a dismissive nature to it all. And in that scenario, your job is to make it very clear that not only are you not on a side, because we are always neutral, we are never on a side, no matter which parent reaches out to us, no matter which parent we actually like better, no matter which parent is kind of a scumbag, we do not ever have a side. The only allegiance we have and the only priority we ever have is to the child's well-being. And we verbalize that, we live that out, we demonstrate it, we make it very, very clear. My only concern and my only relationship that matters is with the child. So whatever's going on between the two of you is irrelevant to me. So that is a stand that we take very emphatically and unapologetically. And then we also have to make it clear that child-centered play therapy is helpful for a child, even if they, quote, don't need it. So when you have a parent that's dismissive and they're like, my kid is great. We have no issues. We have no behavior problems. Everything is wonderful at my house, blah, blah, blah. So then you talk about the four universal outcomes and you say, well, I'm so happy to hear that. And I mean, what a proactive thing to not really be facing a crisis or any kind of struggle, but that you are having them in therapy anyway, and look at what they're going to gain for the rest of their lives. I mean, these four universal outcomes are going to serve them forever, even into adulthood. And so, you know, you're setting them up for success. And that's just such, you know, that's a big deal to really invest in your child proactively when they're a child, to set them up for success in adulthood. And then there's nowhere they can go with that. So that is typically the best way to handle any kind of divorced or separated parental situation if one is not really fully on board. And that can get a little bit tricky, so tread lightly on that one. But all right, so I hope that is helpful. We are inevitably going to be dealing with resistant parents, so we want to make sure that we're equipped to handle that and we understand the why, because we can't just, it's easy to get frustrated, right? It's easy to just be like, oh my gosh, can you just let me do my job? Can you stop calling me? Can you stop no-showing? Can you stop telling me you're going to pull your kid out of therapy? I mean, there's all these things we can lament, right? And rightly so. It's frustrating. But if we understand the why behind why they seem resistant, and or why they are, in fact, resistant, it helps us address it effectively. And so we get our own emotions out of the way. We don't take it personally. That's one of the greatest struggles. We talk about that in Six Figure Play Therapist all the time, all the time. Don't take anything personally. It's not about you. Don't perceive it as an attack. Don't perceive it as anything other than that's where the parent is. And it's hard to do that because we are in a profession that we are wanting to help, we're wanting to serve, we're wanting to teach, we're wanting to come alongside of people. And when they don't like it or accept it or want it or appreciate it, it kind of just like kicks us in the gut. And it takes a lot of emotional maturity on our part and clinical awareness on our part to just take it for what it is and solve the problem. So don't let it affect you emotionally. Don't let it get under your skin. Don't let it become something that you're upset about. Look at it as, why is this behavior here? Get to the root and then solve the problem using what we've talked about in this episode. So hope you find that helpful. If you have not, please go to ccptcollective.com. Check it out. It is a thriving, bustling community. I'm so happy for all of you newbies that have joined. People from all over the world. We have a New Zealander and we have an Australian and we have several Canadians, and that's just like the most recent ones. The list goes on. So we've been introducing ourselves, talking about cases, talking about general discussions. There have been some polls. There have been our weekly Zoom calls where everyone's been able to ask questions and we've been able to watch videos and just hang out together. And I was so excited. Someone posted their welcome profile message and said, well, hello, I'm so happy to have found my people. And that is exactly the sentiment that I've wanted to exist in the collective, is that we have found our people. And when you are around a whole bunch of other passionate, excited, inspired, child-centered play therapists, there is nothing like it. And gosh, it has been fun. So if you haven't already, please go check it out, ccptcollective.com. You can try it out for 14 days just to see what it's like. Hop in there, hop on the call, and you know, get to know some people. And I think you will absolutely love it. The feedback I'm getting has been really, really incredible. So thank you to all of you that are a part of it. If you are interested, please check it out. We'd love to have you. And as always, for all of you all around the world that take me with you each week. It's such an honor and a privilege to hang out with you. And thank you for your emails, brenna@thekidcounselor.com. You can always shoot me an email, whether you want to ask a question, just say hello, or, you know, pick my brain about something. I'm happy to interact with you. So I'd love to hear from you, brenna@thekidcounselor.com. You can also call if you want to leave a question for the podcast, 813-812-5525. Love you all. So thankful for the time that we spend together each week. We'll talk again soon. Bye.
Thank you for listening to the Play Therapy Podcast with Dr. Brenna Hicks. For more episodes and resources, please go to www.playtherapypodcast.com.